Committee will come to order. We do have a quorum present. May I have a motion to approve the minutes, Representative Hancock?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the minutes of February 23rd.
Representative Hancock moves the approval of the minutes of February 23rd. Any discussion to the minutes? All those in favor of approval of the February 23rd minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. Today on the agenda, we have House File 191 and House File 297. I think that they are going to be working together. They're very similar bills. I think we're going to be working from 191, and I'll let the authors of the bills explain it and have them come up and proceed with the bill, the bills. Welcome to the committee, Representative Downey. Would you like to have your bill moved?
Madam Chair, yes. If you would move House File 191 for passage to the State Government Finance Committee.
Okay. Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 191 be recommended to pass and be referred to the State Government Finance Committee.
Okay. Representative Hancock moves that House File 191 be recommended to pass and be referred to the State Government Finance Committee. Please proceed with your bill, and I see you have some amendments. Maybe you can tell us about those, too.
Madam Chair, if it's all right, I would like to have Representative Kahn maybe introduce the background and the history of this bill, and then we could get to the particulars, and we could move the amendments then. Would that be okay?
So talk about the bill and then move the amendments later?
Just have her do a brief introduction, then I'll move the amendments before we go through the bill.
Okay, perfect. Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman and members, this is an issue that I've worked on for a very long time, and I'm very glad to have Representative Downey on board and taking charge, I hope. And I really do believe I've had passed out to members of the committee an issue brief from the Center on Digital Government on data center consolidation, I think. And then there's also a very serious, there has been serious study of data center consolidation. We've moved towards doing certain parts of this from OET. To simplify things, instead of putting two bills before you, we've decided to just work together on Representative Downey's bill. And I think with the amendments that we have, we're both in agreement, and I think that we've also managed to get the maybe not enthusiastic agreement, but endorsement, but I think at least the agreement from the effective members of the state labor unions that this bill, that they don't believe that this bill will harm them. They believe it's something that they can work with. So I guess I go back to Representative Downey.
Yeah.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And before I move the amendments and walk through the bill for folks, I really want to thank Representative Kahn. She's been working on this issue and I think really been advancing good government ideas and bills for years that I am simply fortunate enough to kind of jump onto and maybe add a little bit of refinement to. So thanks to Representative Kahn and her many years of work and her chairmanship of the State Government Finance Committee last year. So with that, members, House File 191 does have a delete all amendment. It's the DE2. And so, Madam Chair, if somebody could move the DE2.
Senator Hancock?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that, I forget the number of the amendment again. DE2. We move that amendment.
Okay, Representative Hancock moves the DE2 amendment to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The DE2 amendment represents the coming together between Representative Kahn and myself around our two versions of the bill. The DE2 amendment simply removes the slightly more prescriptive sections, largely in Section 4, I believe, of the original bill, Section 4, where we were attempting to implement some provisions that I firmly believe in, but maybe in terms of just advancing a version one of this concept as compared to trying to launch a fully mature version of this bill. I'm willing to take out. The provision actually had a mechanism where we would recapture and book the savings from the consolidation of the technology functions across the executive branch agencies. We actually would have captured those savings and brought them back into the technology revolving fund to then be redeployed on other IT initiatives that would have a similar return on investment in state government. I really like that provision in my original bill. It's entirely consistent with the Commission on Service Innovation's recommendations of trying to create funds that drive investment into improvements and then capturing the savings, booking the savings, and then redeploying them. But members, I just think it came to agree with Representative Kahn that in terms of this bill right now, trying to advance a pretty large organizational redesign, that putting that much prescription into statute would maybe be putting the cart before the horse. And so I think I hope this is still something we move to, but for purposes of getting a bill that everyone could accept and something that we could actually advance the ball on, I'm willing to take it out now. I'd encourage you to read that language, this concept, at all levels of government of trying to actually capture the savings of some of our reform initiatives and then redeploy it is a really important one, but we won't prescribe it here in this bill. So that's the bulk of that section. There also was a provision that tried to not only, it went one step further than actually bringing together all of the technology assets and the people and the processes in this area, but also asked the state to kind of test via an RFP process whether OET or some other outsourced service provider would be best suited to perform the work for the long haul. And again, for the sake of trying to get the initial consolidation done, also removing the language that says we will, right out of the blocks, look at whether or not we can outsource this. And so the concept now in the bill is that we would actually bring these assets and these people and these processes together, get them consolidated, and then there are still mechanisms, service level agreements, and options for looking at outside contracts that are still in the bill, but again, not prescribing that process on the front end. So I think not necessarily things that for the long haul I think make sense, but things that I'm very willing to accept here in the initial offering of the bill to get the initial organizational redesign done and to get the organization consolidated in the executive branch without kind of bringing all of these very detailed prescriptive issues into play just before we even get the consolidation done. So, Madam Chair, I'd move support the DE2 amendment.
Do you have any additional comments on the amendment, Representative Kahn?
Completely agree with everything that Representative Downey said. I think we also have an amendment to the DE2 amendment, which is the A2 amendment, which I think we also agree on, too. And it's, again, the same philosophy of making sure that these concepts are all in order, are on the table to be discussed, but I not being quite as prescriptive of exactly how we're doing it. I think we need to get the right people thinking about information systems, and we need to get it in line in the budget as opposed to what it said. Just an anecdote, which Commissioner, I had heard it as an anecdote, but former Commissioner Hansen backed it up and said it actually happened. At one point, in one of the most esteemed, knowledgeable members about health care in the Senate, actually, I don't know if that person made an actual motion or just the suggestion in last year's budget that all of the money for information systems that was in that budget be taken out, be eliminated and put into doing like good things for children or seniors or nursing homes or something like that. It didn't happen, but the point that you have people who so badly care about an issue but just don't care about how you do it, you know, the kind of stuff that you have to be really pretty picky to care about, like numbers. So.
It's been moved. We're on the DE2 amendment. At this time, I think I would like to pass the DE2 amendment so we can work from that if there are no objections. All those in favor of the DE2 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. amendment does prevail, and then we can move on to the next amendment?
A1, yes. A2. I'm sorry, A2, Madam Chair. The okay. A1 is not relevant given the DE amendment that we just accepted. So it's just the A2 that we need to move.
Oh, what's the A2? Oh, yeah, I don't have an A1 amendment. I just have an A2. So
perfect.
That is the amendment you want? Representative McFarland?
I'd like to move the A2 amendment.
Representative McFarland moves the A2 amendment to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so the A2 amendment actually implements kind of a high-level version of what we were just talking about in terms of recapturing the funds and maybe looking at outsourcing. And it, as you read it, you can see that the Chief Information Officer, in consultation with the new Technology Advisory Committee, needs to take a look at how we would actually do that and report back on the viability and perhaps concrete steps for doing those two things. Number one, recapturing the savings, and number two, looking at possible opportunities for contracting for some of these newly consolidated services. So this is the language that Representative Kahn and I have agreed on to kind of replace the other more prescriptive language. This says we'll actually continue to look at it and develop a plan for it.
Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just got a technical question. The A2 amendment, and I don't want to block considering it, but when did that come in? Did it meet your rules of the in by noon yesterday? Because we didn't see that till this morning when we walked in here.
It did.
It did. Our side didn't get copies of that till we walked in this morning.
Mr. Cole?
Madam Chairman and Representative Nelson, that is correct. I emailed it to Mr. Smith late, but I did have it in the hands of the committee. My apologies for that.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Nelson?
I just want to make sure. I know
Nelson?
We had a bill the other day that we let go. We agreed to not abide by that. If we're having to abide by that, we want to make sure everybody abides by the noon deadlines, and so we can see the amendments. And that's the only concern I'm raising going forward in the committee, that we make sure that we get copies of in a timely fashion so that we can look at them and know what's coming.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Nelson. I didn't realize that there was an issue, but we'll try to be diligent on that. And
Madam Chair,
Representative Downey.
And that's my fault. In the DE2, which we drafted to represent the agreement that Representative Kahn and I had come together on, I missed some things in my review of that. Representative Kahn pointed them out, and we quickly had Mr. Shepard draft the A2 to make sure that the DE2 fully represented what we had agreed to.
Okay. Representative Bornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I do have a question about the A2. Mm-hmm. Representative Downey, you talked about opportunities for contracting, which I guess is the outsourcing language, is what I would interpret that comment as. And in the A2, is the way you've kind of distilled down this, you know, controversial issue around outsourcing, which I have concerns about, but am I correct in concluding that lines 16 through 18 is where you've distilled that language down, or is it somewhere else?
Well, Representative Kahn.
It does it, Madam Chairman and members. This just says that we would look at it. Yes, this could be service level agreements. It's not only outsourcing. It's really agreements. It's like the, unless you consider outsourcing something that you're doing within agencies and bringing into the central office. It's not really. Let me give an example of a perfect thing to outsource, because I think it's done far better outsource than insource, and that's the fact that everyone believes that we do need backup services. We do need to have, and the backup services need to be off campus. They need to be away, and the opportunities for finding something that just backs up our state system, and that, you know, it would hardly be something that would be a worker intensive issue is. You know, again, the information will tell us if it's a good idea, but I instinctively, without knowing too much, think that that's a really good idea. That's something that we ought to do, that's going to be cost-effective, and we're going to find a better place, you know, instead of constructing another level 3 security unit for state systems.
Representative Hornstein.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair. I mean, and Representative Downey, I do appreciate that you took out some of that language. And but I still, you know, want to go on record as still having a ongoing concern about, you know, are we going to lose jobs from state employees, and you know, setting up criteria for we have like the Taxpayer Accountability Act that we passed a couple years ago related to MnDOT employees, and the whole process for contracting with outside groups. And so, you know, I just, as we continue the discussion about this bill, I mean, I think, you know, conceptually it's fine, but, you know, that's an ongoing concern of mine, and, you know, I just want to register that and make sure that we continue to have that conversation.
Representative Downey?
Madam Chair, if I could, and I know there's some other questions, but maybe first just a quick technical description of what this amendment does and how it fits into the bill, and then maybe a broader comment. So this section says that the chief information officer, in consultation with this advisory committee, would take a look at this kind of payback mechanism and would fine-tune some of the concepts about service level agreements between OET and the agencies that it serves. And I would direct your attention in the DE2 amendment to, on page 2, lines 2.5 through 2.9. And I need to have a slightly broader discussion about service level agreements. These kinds of consolidation efforts have been tried in lots of different places, lots of different ways, for lots of different functions, not just IT. But in the technology arena, a number of these initiatives have gone badly simply because there is no mechanism between the agency, who now doesn't own all of these assets and people and processes, and the centralized agency that does. And so a best practice in both private sector contracting, memos of understanding, joint partnership agreements, and this kind of a consolidation would be to have a service level agreement that very clearly spells out for the agency and the consolidated technology function exactly what the service levels are that will be provided, the types of services, even metrics for performance, chargebacks, all of those things, so that the agency, who is giving up, frankly, in some of these areas, control and things that might make them a little bit uncomfortable, gives the agency some confidence that their needs are going to be met. And if, in fact, for some subset of what that service level agreement covers, the agency thinks that they could get that service at higher value, lower cost, better service, better production, whatever, they have the option to explore with the CIO whether an outsourced contract would make sense. And I'll give you a classic example. We have some bills that would look at fraud detection. Can help with tax compliance, it can help with unemployment compensation, workers' comp, all these things, right? And the vendors who provide that do that on an outsourced basis and will actually only bill the state a percentage of fees recollected, right? And so in that particular case, there is no interest on the part of the state to bring all of those systems and hire all of those people in-house. The very nature of the contract is that it's a success fee, performance-based contract. And so this would allow, for example, the tax department or Department of Employment and Economic Development to actually engage in those contracts where very clearly the outsourced service provider has some capability that you could barely replicate in the state. So that's the intention, is to create the proper balance between the agency who has lost some control and the agency who's providing it, and yet also provide opportunities where legitimate outsourcing opportunities exist that you can capitalize on those and not be constrained by what you wrote into state law.
Representative Scalzi?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And some of these terms are just kind of, they kind of raise a little bit of a red flag when you talk about the agency who's lost some control. And the problem is when you talk about outsourcing in such a broad manner, it just seems that, you know, we could outsource and in the future be in a position that we don't have any control. You know, the word outsource and the word control, these are troublesome when we have state employees that are currently doing these functions quite well. And I'm just concerned in the future. So this is, you just have to understand that we do have a concern over what
we're talking about regarding our state employees.
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, members, Representative Scalzi, one of the reasons why this is the absolute optimum time to do this is that our state employee demographics fit right in with this, in that particularly in this field, which has been so dramatically changing, we're dealing with a set of state employees who are really getting very close to a time when they will want to retire. We really have a need to often bring in people who are more, as we replace these systems, which, and remember, 36 separate data centers that we have, which we would like to get down to 2 or 3 or so forth, you know, we have people who are needed because they're really operating very obsolete systems, but the obsolete systems is hopefully going to go, and we're going to need people who can do who can do the newer systems. And I don't want to say that the state employee unions are enthusiastically supporting this bill, but I believe they've looked at this and they are comfortable that not one current state employee will lose their job because of this bill. May lose it for other reasons, but this bill, with the savings that this bill will eventually engender, will be very helpful to saving positions that we might lose otherwise.
Representative Downey?
If I could, I don't want to interrupt Representative Scalzi's train of thought there, but I think that the term outsourcing, and maybe I should even quit using it, but so when you look at the enterprise, especially in technology, it gets really fuzzy what makes sense to continue doing and what doesn't, you know. And so it's really almost more of a co-sourcing arrangement. And if you think about the specific proposal on the table to bring all of the 30-some data centers down to 3, it's an interesting complex. The level 2 and 3 data centers would still be housed in the state as they are right now. The level 1 data center would rely on a subset of its overall configuration to be outsourced. And that's kind of the wires and the servers and that kind of stuff. The management of that technology is still done by state employees. So it's really kind of a co-sourced arrangement. And I think the bill attempts to give the state, the executive branch agencies, an intelligently designed mechanism so you can make good decisions. And I think clearly whoever's making those decisions would do that with due consideration to the workforce and efficiency and effectiveness and risk and all of those things. So maybe for the rest of today, I'll try to use the word co-source as compared to outsource, because I think that's far more the reality of what we're talking about. So sorry to interrupt Representative Scalzi.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that, but I don't know if co-sourcing is going to change my fear of what we're talking about when we use the word control, because currently we're upgrading computer systems in the state, and I don't know all of their names, but I go to committee hearings and I hear that, well, we're currently trying to upgrade that, and it's been a 3-year process and it hasn't worked, and systems that don't work together. And I just don't want the state to lose control, and I don't want to be stuck in kind of a mired system that's going to take 3 to 4 years and never come up to par to what we have today, although I understand that 36 is too many. I understand that totally. But I just don't want the state to lose control or state employees to somehow lose their jobs or get into a position where we're not able to function as a state in computer systems speaking with each other.
Representative Kahn.
Well, I think the major thing that this bill does is make us able to function as a state in computer systems, is that it really puts the, which I thought we had done over the years, and I started, hate to admit how long it's taken, but I did start working on this in about 75, before people on this committee were born. But the the critical thing is that you put the decisions where people who allegedly know what they're doing are making them, and even in the legislative decision making process, it's really far better, particularly when we're restraining things and trying to bring data centers together, is that you have one committee as opposed to all the individual committees. You know, even setting priorities as to what system, if we're not going to be able to do everything at the same time, what system should be upgraded first? You know, and the reason why this is just about the best time to do this is that everything is new. The legislative leadership is new. The leadership of the executive branches is new. And so it's a perfect time to get away from entrenched attitude.
Madam Chair.
Representative Downey.
I certainly do want to shut down the questions. My hope was that after we accepted the A2 as the author's amendment that I could actually walk through the bill. And I think some of the questions that we've heard might be addressed with just a quick walkthrough of the bill. So I don't want to suggest to you how you'd like to proceed, but that, from my perspective, might be helpful to preempt some question marks for people.
Well, I have several people on the list, and I'm not sure if they want to talk about the A2 or the DE2. The next person I have on the list is Representative Nelson. Did you want to talk to this amendment still? I don't want to take a vote if people aren't comfortable with the amendment yet.
I guess I'll save my question for the total bill. But I understand the A2 amendment, what's going on there.
Okay, then I'll keep you on the list. Representative Quam, did you have a question for the A2 amendment or to the bill?
To the bill is best.
Okay, I'll pass on that then. Representative Winkler, could you raise the... Okay, I think at this time then we can perhaps vote on the A2 amendment so that Representative Downey and Representative Kahn can walk through the bill as and get it in the shape they like. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Amendment does prevail. Back to you, Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So just to walk through the articles of the DE2 real quickly, an important concept here is that we are not attempting in this bill to group the ownership of every dimension of information technology across the executive branch agencies. It is what would be, kind of just to use layman's terms, the kind of utility type functions, the things that have over time become so commonplace that most of us literally manage them on our home desktops just through the alerts that pop up on your screen. So all of the wires and the servers and the operating system software and the database software and all these things that just have to be on your systems in order for them to function. And then the people and processes, help desk, break fix, and all of those kinds of things related to those more utility functions. The higher level applications, at least as this bill envisions it, would remain, the ownership of those would remain in the agencies. They're the ones with the business process expertise, the knowledge of the data, the knowledge of the customers and all of the interactions. So I don't know whether that represents 50% or 60% of the entire stack of technology in the state, but it's the more commonly the common things that are that should be probably common across the state. So that's one thing. The second is to give the CIO in this new role an advisory committee, and you can see the membership of that committee. But the intention is to provide business direction, if you will, from within the executive branch agencies to the chief information officer. Section 3 and 4, I think we've talked about quite a bit already, and Section 5 talks about the specific duties and assets and people that would be transferred and how that would actually take place. Lastly, the study component, we actually got feedback from both the lottery and the Armor State Radio Board system that we might have some complications with those two systems, the lottery based on some federal law and the State Radio Board for other just operational considerations. So we've intentionally excluded them, at least to date, from this and said that the CIO should study and provide a recommendation. And then there's some conforming changes for bringing the Geospatial Information Office into the fold as well. There's some existing statute that just needed to be tuned up from a technical standpoint to make sure that it fit in well. So, members, that is the bill, and I'd be glad to entertain questions. And, Madam Chair, I also want to make sure we have ample time for Mr. Gilmer. Those of you who were on the State Government Finance Committee last year remember that we commissioned a study. Some of you saw, I think, the executive summary of that may have actually paged through it, but Mr. Gilmer has a slightly deeper dive that we can go through that I think will support many of the recommendations in this bill and really open people's eyes up to the details and the particulars of what we're talking about. So at some point I want to make sure we have some time for him.
Well, I know there are several members that do have questions, but perhaps we should have the PowerPoint before we open it up to questions, if that would be okay with those asking questions. Okay, why don't you come to the table, Mr. Gilmore, and state your name and who you're with to the committee before you begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. I am Jeff Gilmore with Excipio Consulting, and as Representative Downey prescribed earlier, we were hired to perform what was titled the Enterprise Assessment. So the Enterprise Assessment, if you look at it, was the evaluation of the opportunity to provide centralized management but yet locally delivered services within the state of Minnesota from a technology standpoint. The bill, this assessment of the bill took place last year. We started in approximately September, October of 2009. It was completed in by July 1st of 2010. The Office of OET was who led us through that in consultation with the other executive agencies to go through the bill. And the goal of it was to understand what is the total cost of ownership as well as all of the components within technology for the entire state of Minnesota. The first thing that we went to accomplish was the total cost and the breakdown. And what this shows you is a breakdown by category. So this is what Representative Downey was referring to. If you look at the operations column here, the operations are the utility computing areas within the government today, within the state of Minnesota. And you can see some of those subcategories on the left break down by people, contractors, hardware, software, etc. The total operational spend is about 50% of the IT structure today. The applications that you see on the other side, those are dependent based on the executive branches. So within each branch, those are the applications in the areas of people that would be retained within those executive branches, would not be centralized. So I want to make it clear, from a centralized portion, what we're really looking at is centralizing the operations or the utility computing components of that. There were some critical success factors that were identified. I'm not going to go through the entire list. One thing that I do want you to realize is if you look at the category on the left-hand side here, the bill actually had the options of 100% outsourced compared to 100% internally centralized at the state of Minnesota. And then there was a third option that was requested, which was what is our best option, or what we would consider a hybrid. Representative Downey called it a co-source type of option, and that was the third option. The focus of this bill is really on the insource at this point in time, the centralization. So we'll talk a little bit, and I'll give some examples around that area. A couple of the critical success factors that you need to realize. One, I'm not going to go through the whole list, but one is this is a long-term strategy. This is not a strategy that the state would undertake and in 2 years or 3 years change their mind on. At a minimum, you need to make a commitment of a seven-year life on this particular type of dimension. So if you're going to centralize, and if we're going to centralize everything within the state to really realize the results, this is a seven-year type of commitment. I want everybody to understand that. There are some key things that we have seen within from a governmental aspect, and just so you understand, we have worked with many other states. We've worked with several federal agencies on consolidation, large cities, large counties, and other areas. But some of the key factors that have made this successful in other governmental areas are central management and control of all of the FTEs, the budgets, and the contracts. And again, it's not all the FTEs, but it's the FTEs within that utility computing, the day-to-day function area that we're talking about here. A mandate for that centralized management. If it's volunteer, it creates more confusion than it does provide profit for you and benefit. Legislative support of that. And then also the ability to capture some of that savings and reinvest. One thing within technology, and based that you're going a seven-year term, is you're going to have to reinvest. You can't just make a one-time investment and expect that 7 years from now it's still going to be functioning. Technology just changes too quickly. You have to allow for a portion of that savings to be allowed to continue to upgrade and update and continue to move forward with that technology. This chart, which I realize is a little bit small, but the point that I want to make here is this is related to the IT resources within the day-to-day operations in the state today. There are 1,800 employees today within the state that are performing these functions. And as you begin to centralize, you are the requirement would be somewhere around 1,580 FTEs to perform the functions. Now, this is not reflective of any of the employees. This is not reflective of their skill sets. This is just a character of the structure today. Having 36 data centers, having 20 different help desk systems, having multiple types of asset management systems across your desktop to manage the functions within them, create where there are people needed to cover additional shifts, the different coverages, that could greatly be simplified. So by centralizing, and this is whether it's centralized internally or whether it's centralized in a co-source or any option, there are efficiency gains that you will receive with these people that you would not have today in a decentralized environment. Again, it's not reflective of the people. It's reflective of how we've grown up building this.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, I understand what you're saying here, that basically you're being repetitive. You're having multiple people in different agencies do the same thing. And if you centralize, you could have one person instead of one and a half people doing some of these things. Question I have is, and this is, I'll get to this in a broader way later, but you didn't measure service differences. I guess I want, or maybe you did, but as I paged ahead here, I don't see anything about additional service that may be provided to agencies by having some of these people in their own agency. And so I wonder if we've looked, I guess I'd like to make sense of the difference between saving money, consolidating versus reducing service for the agencies.
Okay.
Mr. Gilmer?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Winkler. Actually, services were looked at within this, and it's not in this PowerPoint. Just to give you an idea, the total documentation for this assessment was almost 3,000 pages. And then there is a summary of this around 160 pages, and I tried to consolidate it down based on the time frame. But there are areas where there would actually be significant service increases today, where there are agencies, as an example today, that may only be able to staff their data center 8x5 Monday through Friday, that now would have 7x24 coverages, that might only be able to staff their help desk and support systems during business hours, that could now have, you could have a help desk support system 7x24 as an example, if you take advantage of that consolidation. So in majority of the cases, there is an increase in service. I'm not going to say that's 100% because there are some unique things in the agencies that would have to be addressed where you may need to retain something at the agency level. Those are more specific to the application side, however, not to the utility computing side. But yes, within the application side, there are some unique things. The applications that run in DOT are completely different than one in that run in revenue, that run in public safety, and there are unique business characteristics, and that knowledge does need to stay within the agency.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Okay. The next one, I'm just going to point out a few examples here. Like I mentioned, it is quite a lengthy document. But this one that I'm going to point out is talking about server virtualization. And what virtualization is rather than having physical servers and that you run one of your agency business applications on each server, in today's environment, you can slice that server up and you can put multiple applications on a particular server. Currently at the state of Minnesota, there's about 16% of these servers virtualized. So about 16% are running on another server together. To give you an idea, there are other states. There's another state that we just completed an assessment for, and they are at about 48% virtualized. Now what this means is physical servers would be reduced, and there is a snowball effect here. So if you go from 1,000 servers and you have 16% virtualized and you can go to 48%, that means you now have 48% fewer physical servers, which means you need less data center space, which means you have less cooling and power needs, which means you pay less in utility bills, you would have lower data storage, you'd have lower disaster recovery requirements, so it just continues. Now, it's not 48% of all of those. Please understand it might be lesser or different percentages. But by taking advantage of some of these technologies and centralizing this together, instead of having each agency with their own servers, with their own application, in their own data center, with their own DR, you can pull this together and greatly increase the efficiency as well as reduce your cost structure. Okay. Next one talks about storage management. What also happens is because each agency has their own data center with their own storage management, as you know, storage grows and grows and grows. So we have great abundance of storage today. There is more memory and storage in your cell phone today than there were in servers 10 years ago. Okay? Well, what happens is every agency, because we go through an annual or biannual budget process, they have to purchase storage in advance. So every agency has overpurchased additional storage. Well, that additional storage that has been overpurchased right now represents about 45% of the environment. If you were in a centralized environment, you may only need to overpurchase by 5 or 10%. So there is a cost savings, and really what it is it's a deferral of that cost of buying that storage out to farther dates and buying only what's appropriate rather than having each agency buy on their own, as an example. So there's another cost reduction opportunity. Service desk opportunity. This is a chart of all the agencies. We interviewed all the agencies in quite detail of understanding each of the different service desk or help desk entities that they have today. And you can see there's a wide range. You can also see that some of the agencies have more than one service desk. These could be centralized significantly, giving you better coverage, also providing a centralized type of service desk system. One problem that we have today within the state is each one of these agencies comes with a budgetary number, and I'm just going to use $100,000 as an example. So they come and they say, I need $100,000 for my service desk system, and then Human Services comes for $100,000 for theirs, and Labor and Industry $100,000 for theirs, and MnDOT $100,000 for theirs. So now we have $500,000 being requested. What typically happens is they don't receive the $100,000 to implement their help desk system. They receive $50,000. So now we have help desk systems that are receiving half of the cost, and they're implementing it on half the cost, but they're also 50% implemented, which is why you see in here a lot of no data. Those are people that have systems, but they couldn't implement the systems because they didn't receive enough funding to implement it. Now let's take the reverse of that. Let's say we implement an enterprise help desk system. We just asked for $500,000. We allocated $250,000. We have five systems operating at 50%. If we went and took 200 of the $250,000 as an example, and again, these are just arbitrary numbers, we could put in place an enterprise help desk system where all of these agencies would have everything implemented in a centralized system. So it would be better use of our funds on the front side, we'd have better coverage, and we would have all the data to support everyone. That's the type of advantage that you can obtain by centralizing your help desk system or going with a centralized type of environment. Okay. Next one is your desktop management. This is very similar to the help desk system. Today there is not a centralized asset management system, meaning we are not tracking all of our PCs, all of our laptops, all of our printers, all of our devices that we have out there. And we actually went through and performed a very detailed inventory and analysis with all the agencies. And what we found is there are 32,000 people that use PCs in the state of Minnesota. But there are 37,000 desktops and laptops out there. So we have 5,000 more than we have people using, which means we're paying for extra software licensing, extra antivirus, extra maintenance. We're paying extra costs on 5,000 PCs that we don't need today. Had we gone through and put an asset management system in place, a centralized asset management system, we would have known that we had extra PCs. We could have pulled those out of service. We could have reclaimed the software licensing and used it again for the antivirus and the operating systems and the other factors. So again, we have a waste of money here in that we have extra PCs because we don't have a centralized asset management in place. So if we were to take the time and put the investment in, we could recover these costs again. The other thing I'm going to talk about is the shared service catalog. OET has been in the process. Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Representative Winkler has a question.
Wrong side of Nicholas Park. All right.
I get the two of you mixed up sometimes. I
represent
don't know why.
The sunny side.
Representative Simon, sorry about that.
Thanks very much. Just a quick question before you go on. This is really interesting, the centralized asset management. But what I'm wondering is, just because it isn't currently centralized doesn't mean that the current agencies aren't off the hook. In other words, what you're saying is quite interesting, that we're probably 5,000 devices too big. On an agency-by-agency basis, what, if anything, has been the problem there in getting to this situation?
Okay. Mr. Gilmer.
Representative Simon, we actually have the detail by agency that shows that. I didn't bring it here today. It is in the report, so you could go through that. There are some agencies that are doing very well. There are other agencies that, yes, it is an extreme difference, and we could go through that. The key factor, again, goes back to what I mentioned before. What we found in most cases, it wasn't the agency's fault, per se. They were doing the best that they could do. But, again, because they asked for $100,000 for the complete asset management system and they received $50,000 in the funding, they couldn't implement it fully, so they can't track everything fully. That's more the case of what we saw. It wasn't anything to do with the people, the characteristics of the people, the agency trying to do their job. It was more lack of resources.
Okay, please proceed.
Okay, the next thing I'm going to talk about here is the shared service catalog. And this is critical because you need to have, before you can move forward with the business of bringing your contracts together, of bringing your people together, of bringing your licensing agreements together, your maintenance, You need to have some sort of tool or management tool in place to reallocate those resources and those cost structures and really understand a shared environment. So the shared service catalog allows for the allocation and recovery of those appropriate IT funds from a centralized organization. We have worked with the Office of Enterprise Technology. They have been using a service catalog methodology for several years, and we went through a refinement process with them in the last 12 months. And during that process, that catalog now today has the capability of taking on a centralized shared environment. So it would allow you to do centrally managed but yet locally delivered services. It would allow you to continue to progress towards a central IT model. It would recover those service costs on a break-even basis, so you'd be able to recover those costs from the agencies and provide that service at competitive rates. So you have a measurement tool with the service catalog to measure what those costs are, and are you providing them at a competitive rate? And it also then is very open and transparent. So the agencies know, I'm purchasing this service, this is what I'm getting for the service, and this is the cost of that service. The last slide I want to talk about is the summary of the financial benefits. And there are a couple key factors here to realize. First of all, you can't obtain these types of saving benefits without making an investment. And that's something that I want everyone to realize. There is a transition cost that is involved with each one of these different factors. So you see the centralization to OET, you see the fully outsourced, and you see the kind of the hybrid on the right-hand column. Your operational savings, and again, this is only the $155 million baseline that is the utility. This has nothing to do with the applications that are running within those respective agencies today. But your annual savings on that would be $35 million, or about 22% that you could obtain. The net savings after the transition cost is about $25 million. And your seven-year net savings is close to $180 million, as you can see there, $177 million over that course. Now, your transition costs, that $65 billion in transition relates to things such as relocation of those employees, replacement of those employees, purchasing full asset management systems, purchasing an enterprise help desk system, utilizing some people to implement those systems that you don't have the skill sets of today, some external consulting to bring everything up. So, and the majority of that cost would occur within the first 2 years. There are ways you could extend that or defer that depending on how you would structure it. One point that I do want to make, if you look at the transition costs are much higher under the alternative. The reason that the costs are much higher under alternative one and two is when we went forward with this and asked for the cost related to an outsource or a co-source type of solution, we made a requirement that they would have to hire and retain all of the state employees for a minimum of 1 year and then take over and cover their pension and severance and other factors. Well, that is the largest majority of your cost in the transition, is the cost of those other people taking over those people. Now, in this bill of centralizing within the state, you know, that doesn't really come into play, that secondary, but I did want you to understand why those costs were much higher than the standard centralization.
Representative Simon?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one quick question. You just said that the bulk of the seven-year net savings would probably be realized in the first 2 years. What kind of precision, if any, could you give us as to how to meter out those savings? I only ask because I know we're not a finance committee here, but I'm sure Chair Lanning would want to know with as much specificity as possible, if we were to do something like this, how much he could actually, with a straight face, book, you know, in those first 2 years in terms of savings.
Mr. Gilmer?
So, Madam Chair, Representative Simon, I'm not sure if I stated that way, but that would have been stated incorrectly. What I meant to say is the bulk of the $65 million in transition is in the first 2 years, and the bulk of the recovery occurs after year two. So years two through seven is the bulk of the recovery because you've made the investment. So maybe I misspoke there.
Madam Chair, can I just add one
point? Representative Downey.
Thank you. With regard to the bill, and first, thank you to Mr. Gilmer and the fine work that his team did. It's really been an exhaustive study, and it has produced some really meaningful data for us to base our policy decisions on. But with regard to the bill, we actually, I'll say, we aren't really doing any one of those three. We're really, as if you remember some of the changes that we made, we're really just kind of reorganizing the assets and the people and the budgets, and then the consolidation, the actual physical moving and all of those kinds of things would take place after that.
the proposal to do the data center consolidation, $16 million, if I remember right, roughly, would be part of that $65 million in Mr. Gilmer's number. So you've started to see some proposals for those costs already. And I think the detailed decisions about, to use your term, Representative Simon, how do you meter these transition costs out over time? You know, the detailed design of the overall conceptual strategy that Mr. Gilmer's firm laid out, that's part of what we would need to work with the department on and the executive branch agencies to figure out how to do that exactly with all of the variables considered.
Okay, I think at this time we can take additional questions for Mr. Gilmer. If we don't have questions for him, then I'll go back to my list that I have of folks who had questions for the actual bill. And then I do have people from OET that want to testify as well. So if you, you know, choose to pass now, that's fine as well. But at this time, is there any questions for Mr. Gilmer? Okay, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Gilmer, is this assuming that you're going to go to a cloud-type application, and are you also looking at some of your vendors being paid by a percentage of savings?
Mr. Gilmer.
Chair and Representative Quam, the assessment did not go to that degree of detail of an implementation stage of that. I will, speaking to the cloud, from a cloud perspective, that's a significant, there's a significant maturity level that the data centers would need to achieve today before you could move to a cloud type of solution. The state is not at that point in time. There are, if you were to look at the hybrid solution, there already is a cloud solution in place today that you are pursuing with the Microsoft BPOS. With the email, which is actually a very effective way for the state. There are other opportunities, and actually the hybrid that was on the far right was the one we truly would recommend you pursue, the co-source of the hybrid, and use some of those types of cloud services rather than making 15-year investments in some of the areas. And, you know, we would strongly recommend you consider that at that point in time. We did not get to the point of looking at contracts of vendors and would they be providing based on performance, recovery, or other things. I'm sure that those vendors, in working with other states and other areas, are more than happy to look at contract structures. They're more than happy to look at deferring costs until back end of contracts versus upfront from a cash flow and a budgetary perspective. And we've worked with other states successfully in that fashion to help get through budget times. So those are all options. We did also look at, rather than purchasing equipment, leasing equipment, which defers some of your costs as well. And helps in that manner, and that was looked at. And all of those options are things that we think you should seriously consider going forward.
Any other questions for the witness? Okay, at this time, I will revert back to the list of questions to the authors for the bill. And Representative Nelson, you are first on my list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And some of what the last witness here talked about, I'm not an IT person. I don't even play one on TV. But I have a brother that does this. I have a brother that does this in many conversations, especially during the deer hunting season, and him explaining some of the stuff he explained. I understand it's from some of what he does. But I still have some concerns, basic concerns I have, and I do have one question here, but concerns I have about the outsourcing is there are some things that we as a state should do and we should take responsibility for, including, and one of those is prisoners. We sentence people to prison. We should be taking care of that and be responsible for that as a state. Another is the information that we have on our citizens, and the security of that information is something that I think we as a state should be managing. So I have concerns about outsourcing this stuff out and having it out there where it could be, we won't have control over it. And the other thing I have concern about outsourcing has to do with something that happened to me Monday. I had to order flowers for a friend's funeral, and I tried to call the flower shop Monday morning to order these flowers, thinking I'd get them, and I got an outsourced help desk to make me order these through. The gentleman that I spoke with barely spoke English, and I had a hard time getting these flowers ordered, which added to my frustration of a very bad day that I was already heading into because of this good friend's passing away and having to go to his funeral. But the question I guess I have, these are my comments, but the question I have here, and I know we're not a finance committee, but I see on page 3 of the line 11 of the DE2 amendment, there's two blank dollar amounts there, and do we have any idea what these are going to cost? Or, and I know we're not a finance committee, but I guess it's just this will be the only time until it gets to the floor that I see the bill. I'm just wondering if we know what those cost out figures are.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chairman and members, that's one of the things you have to understand is that OET has almost none of its budget from the general fund. It's usually funded from paybacks from the other agencies. But if one of the things that we're doing is that we're moving the control to OET away from the agencies, what you'll probably see is a reduction in the general fund appropriation to those agencies and the general fund increase to OET. But and the complications, particularly as you're doing this in transition, as to what the total amount of general fund money would be was, is something that has to be discussed through the whole budget system. What we're saying is that it's much simpler if you put it in one place instead of how many different, and just legislatively, just legislatively looking at it, I don't know, 10, 7, I don't know how many finance committees we have these days. And the other basic point is that the thing that I thought was just, when we talked to OET about you need money to be able to think ahead of the curve and do that, it was very hard to get extra general fund appropriation to do this. And they run into real troubles in how you increase when you're doing it on a payback from agencies, how you get to increase that amount of money, even if it's a tiny percentage, without having to make the argument of how it's going to benefit the specific agency whose amount is being decreased. So, and anyone concerned about security, first thing you need to be concerned about is these 36 data centers, most of which have totally inadequate, out-of-date security. So if we get to the two or three, they will have plus the what they're doing right now to, I think, outsource to the highest level or fix up the highest level in-house, we're going to have far better security than we have right now. If you knew how bad it was, you wouldn't complain about anything in this bill.
Representative Nelson.
And the security part of it, I understand, and I kind of agree with what the concept of the bill of trying to move it from multiple into smaller, partly because even with some of the new technology, again, listening to the stuff that my brother tells me, and some of it goes over my head, but it's moving them all together, it makes it, saves money, and the new technology that's out there allows a lot of that to be moved in to smaller amounts of space and smaller equipment and less multiple places. So I can see the cost savings in that, but didn't answer the question. I guess the answer to the question is you don't know yet what those two blanks would be filled in with.
No, but
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, what I'm saying is that it can't be looked at in terms of this budget alone. It has to be looked at in terms of reductions from other budgets, because currently the amount that would be that amount of money, beyond that, this is only a little part that we haven't had, but for the operating of all of OET has been spread out over budgets all over the thing. So it's impossible to answer that. This is a very legitimate blank.
Representative Downey?
No, Representative Kahn, I think, described it very accurately.
Okay, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Being a freshman, went through the introduction, some of the different things and talked with the IT people. And at first I couldn't understand why it took years, and then they still didn't have things right with some of the IT implementations, until I realized that there were so many heads in silos, to this beast of IT that we've got. And, I was naive in that I was from a private sector. I actually did some hardware development for servers for a little company here in the U.S. And it's amazing that just in a fraction of the savings, companies are making billions of dollars improving the IT, both for private and public sector companies and entities. And what we're seeing here is just trying to bring us in the 20th century. We can maybe go to the 21st century later on, but I've seen the reports and the plans and the things that are done in the private sector. You know, I work for IBM, I've worked for Motorola, and it is amazing. But to get an idea of the amazement is, you know, think 5 years ago, and we look at the age of some of our servers and hardware, and 5 years ago, you've got, you know, something that can't even imagine to do this. And so it's we've got that hardware knowledge, but we've also got how you do it better and smarter. And I think what we're leveraging with this is taking what we've got, doing it better and smarter, getting rid of, you know, it's a duplication, but if you get one or two people doing something in a department, now you take five departments, bring them together, and as a team, that collaborative brain power is magnified and multiplied so that our professionals that are doing this IT work now can do it so much more effectively. And like it was hinted at, you're not just 8 to 5, now you're covering a much broader amount of time, and I like the idea in here of where you're maintaining the current personnel, because sometimes I do have difficulty when I call in and get an outsourced helpline. But I must applaud the work and effort that's gone into this bill, and I'm just, you know, having seen it done over the years in the private sector, I understand the concerns, but I think they have done their due diligence and homework, and I would just ask to maybe get a glimpse at that, you know, small 300 and some page summary to better understand the details. But from my background, I have no issues or qualms about this bill.
Representative Downey?
Madam Chair and Representative Quam, thank you for the vote of confidence. Just two thoughts. You know, I don't know that there's any difference between private and public sector in this regard. I mean, organizations all the time, for whatever reason, get to a point where they try and make a rational decision about how they structure this stuff. And I guess you could probably argue that the private sector is ahead of the public sector in general with this. The revenue pressures that have now kind of finally gotten into the public sector are forcing some thinking that maybe it wouldn't have gotten to without that. But I think these are just good decisions, and different people make them at different times for hopefully the right reasons. And then a second comment, I want to be really careful that we don't look at this bill or this kind of broader initiative as a panacea for large application system deployments that have a high propensity for failure. The complex activity of taking really, really detailed business processes that oftentimes flow from federal government to state down to counties and locals, and then thinking that you can just throw in new application systems and improve them without doing really, really thoughtful business process analysis on the front end, having a ton of kind of stakeholder management and broader project management combined with a really robust project management effort. You know, when you hear about the big colossal failures, and they're everywhere, it's not, again, just public sector, it's everywhere, it's because those fundamental business management and project management issues typically are given short shrift. This bill simply takes the utility functions and attempts to optimize them. The issues of what do we do with big application systems and human services and transportation and all those other areas, that's a separate set of issues. Hopefully having a common, well-controlled, secure, standardized platform on which to do all those things will have a little bit higher chance of success, but this doesn't guarantee success across all IT ventures in the state or any other organization.
I have one other member question on the list, Representative Winkler, but then what I think I'd like to do after that, if it would be okay, is I do have the CIO of OET who'd like to testify, as well as a couple of representatives from MAPE.
I'd rather hear from OET first.
Okay. If Ms. Parnell, if you could come up and testify.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to be a voice at the table in this conversation. I am brand new. I recognize that. But I can also tell you that I am not new to a lot of these issues that are being discussed.
Identify yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Carolyn Parnell, the Commissioner for OET and State CIO. So I'm not new to many of these issues that have been discussed. They are fairly common IT issues. Just a conversation about centralizing a help desk is not a new issue. But because I have not, I've had conversations with Representatives Kahn and Downey, but I don't believe I have spoken with any of you. I'd like to just give you a brief message on my background so that you sort of know what my history is. My most recent position was as Chief Operating Officer for IT for MinSCU, and that system was a federated system very much like this one is. Instead of having public agencies and commissioners and CIOs, there were college and universities around the state with university presidents and CIOs. So I'm fairly used to this model of organization. Prior to that, I was in charge of information and broadcast technology at Minnesota Public Radio. Prior to that, I took a dip into the private sector and was the director of networks and data centers for a company that produced internet-based productivity software for the real estate industry, and my job was to manage data centers around the country. And prior to that, I was at the University of Minnesota as the director of networking and telecommunications. So I do have a fairly lengthy history of managing IT issues, and these are all valid issues that have been raised here, in my opinion. Just a couple of comments on OET. In my very early days, I'm recognizing that OET is not a very old organization in essence. It itself is a result of a centralization about 5 years ago of some disparate IT organizations. And I believe that has done a good job of aligning itself with a better model of service delivery and technology in the few years that it's been in existence. I would also like to say that they're not new to consolidation and centralization of services. In the past couple of years, there has been a concerted effort to centralize the approach to security, and there has been a very collaborative effort in getting security program in place and responsibility shared with public agencies. There has been a very concrete project that centralized and consolidated all of email messaging for the executive branch. They took a lot of disparate systems and transferred everyone into a new exchange system that is centrally managed. There was a procurement change in terms of establishing standards for hardware and software and leveraging some volume opportunities for cost savings. And I've been given the number of savings of $148 million over the last couple of years. That's a significant amount of savings, and I believe that that's the sort of example we can use as efficiencies, freeing up money that we can then use to reinvest in other opportunities. The difference in those kinds of centralizations of systems and applications and software has not entailed the very important people issue, though. And this bill does introduce that whole notion of moving people around and establishing a different sort of order for them to deal with. I think my message is that that is something that, in my mind, has to be done very collaboratively, very carefully, and with a keen sense of what effect those changes would have on employees. So I just want to carry that message forward, let you know that these ideas are good ideas. They are not new to OET, but that people factor, I believe, is extremely important.
Representative Winkler?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome to OET. For my two cents, I guess, on your position, I very much felt that we didn't lack vision in the office, and we didn't lack vision for the desire to move in this direction. What we desperately have needed, I think, is people with the experience to actually get it done and the commitment from the governor to actually make this happen and to make it a top priority. So I hope and I believe that you have that. My question, first of all, is, you know, I don't know how much, I suspect some of this bill is necessary to make some changes that you would like to make. I guess my question to you, is, first of all, is, does this bill align with your vision of creating greater efficiency and better service in for technology for the state enterprise, or is it inconsistent with it? Is it something you support? You know, how is this going to work going forward as we engage management and this new policy direction?
Ms. Parnell.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm very conscious of the possibilities here. And I'm very conscious of the need to take a vision and take a plan and then have that be translated into an operational outcome. And the devil is in the details, as we all know. So I think that that has to be something that is carefully defined, that is very is approached very collaboratively, and an end state needs to be defined. I think it's too soon to determine how to get to that definition of an end state, but I think it's worthy of a conversation.
Madam Chair, Ms.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Ms. Parnell, and you know, sometimes a bill is a great way to start a conversation and to really bring attention to something. Is it your, do you intend to continue working with the authors to shape the bill and find the, you know, make sure that it provides the legal basis, or I guess to change some of the statutory language that may exist already to help you implement that, or is it, are these going on kind of separate tracks from what you may be engaged on?
Ms. Parnell.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm sort of in the process of figuring out how multiple pieces are fitting together. We have, for example, the Commission on Innovation that I'm chairing. The governor has charged me and Commissioner Kronk and Commissioner Showalter with some real reform, and we're encouraged to be very open-minded about that. And so I want to make sure that all of these sort of are of a piece and that they're not going on in parallel without each being in the view of each other. I'm very interested. I'm here because I'm very interested in the conversation and in collaborating and figure out how we can best work together to achieve these kinds of efficiencies and significant cost savings.
And Representative Winkler.
So, Madam Chair, this is not, I guess, just to Ms. Parnell, but to the bill authors. You know, you've laid out, I think, a good vision and a good step to go forward, but, you know, as Ms. Parnell said, the not just the devil's in the details, but the devil's in the management skills and the commitment from the CEO to make this happen. And so I guess I just wonder if you have kind of a vision of how you'll continue to work with the administration to make sure that we're providing the legal authorization needed to execute what I think is ultimately a management vision of where they want to go. And if you have any thoughts on that.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Winkler, first, I really appreciate our new CIO seeking me out and Representative Kahn and having that preliminary discussion. I think we've actually done a fairly good job. Many of us might wish that it had happened faster or sooner. But if you think about the collaboration between the executive branch and the legislature, just at least in the 2 years I've been here, and being able to look at some of the work that preceded me, you know, I think Gopal Khanna, our former CIO, really built this federated vision, brought in a chief technology officer and a chief security officer, started to do some of the centralization that Ms. Parnell just described, and then the legislature, through our State Government Finance Committee 2 years ago, drove that a little bit ahead by requiring this study that we now have, and the kind of embrace of those study results in our now legislative action. I hope that's evidence of how the process should work. It's always a little clunky, and now we have a leadership transition that we've got to try and get through and make sure that we don't lose momentum on it. But I guess my own personal commitment is absolutely we continue doing the things that I hope we've seen evidence of in the past, and it goes all the way back to former Chair Khan and some of her leadership on this. So I hope that continues, and it's a deliberate and intentional and strategic process, and one that we can keep lighting a fire under as it's appropriate from the legislature.
Representative Khan?
Let me just point out one specific example of something that we did centralize, and I don't know how many people have you heard from constituents or had to go to meetings of saying what an awful thing we were doing, and that was when the whole concept of electronic licensing, where every board had their own licensing system, and they were all certain that they were just perfect and they were just perfect for them and so forth. And some of them had just put in a system to get an electronic licensing system. And, of course, almost none of them were on 24/7 and that sort of thing. And, you know, I never had – there were lobby – and one of the things is that we were paying for this with a surcharge on the license fee. When I finally got – you know, you'd have a physician's license or a psychiatrist's license – and the surcharge was going to be like $5 a year for 3 years or something like that. And I sort of put into what I imagined their salary was. And they were clearly paying a lot more in lobbying against this than it was ever going to cost them. And we went ahead and did it. We totally ignored, I don't remember serious opposition in the legislature. No, I guess I just had to go to many more meetings where people screamed at me than other people did. But, you know, I think it's the kind of example, we do have that example to go back on. Obviously, much simpler than many of the things we want to do. But, you know, I'm not pretending that we're not going to run into opposition. One thing I want to make completely clear is that there's nothing in the bill. We're very strictly dealing with lines of authority. And, you know, I don't know if we need some questions about when these would occur, but there's nothing in the bill that requires people to move. You can work, allegedly, when we're talking about distance learning and distance management and so forth, you can sit at your desk and be responsible to somebody somewhere else, you know, if this is to mean anything at all. So, and again, major model that we're following, and maybe at some point we should bring in on a conference call and speak to the CIO of the state of Utah, was that Utah seems to have done this more smoothly than any other state has done, and in moving everything. You know, and in fact, my initial bill was designed to be modeled after the Utah law. So we're not going in a new direction totally.
Does anyone else have any questions for Ms. Parnell before I want to give Mabe a chance to testify as well?
Madam Chair, could I make one more comment, please?
Ms. Parnell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just want to comment on where OET is with the data center consolidation. There was an RFP that was put out in the last calendar year. The responses have come in. It's being evaluated. There was a sort of holdup while people waited for me to be appointed to this position so that I could weigh in. I feel very strongly that the data center consolidation is the direction to go. I believe we've made a great deal of progress. It's been a very collaborative effort. We have pulled in CIOs from some of the agencies who have the most at stake. And we are very definitely going down that path of data center consolidation at the time.
Okay. Thank you. Any other question for Ms. Parnell before we move on to the next witness? Thank you. Next on the agenda, I think we can get both of them up. I think they're both from Mabe, Brad Schrunk and Dan Vick.
welcome to the committee, and if you could just state your name and organization for the tape, that would be greatly appreciated.
Well, my name is Brad Schrunk. I'm here as a representative of a taxpayer. I do work for OET, but I'm here on my own time.
My name is Dan Bick. I'm here on behalf of myself. I work at the Office of Enterprise Technology.
Oh, okay. Please proceed, Mr. Schrunk.
I'll give you a little background. I've been in the computer business 30 years. I started out with Commodore 64s and, you know, moved all the way up to now I do statewide networking, firewall, security, that type of work. I own my own business for 10 years, so I understand the private sector. And I've also done a lot of consulting and finally came here to work. A couple of the things I wanted to say. I'm here as an advocate or the things that I've observed over the years working for OET. We've been evaluated by the Gartner Group twice. In that evaluation, we were listed as twice as efficient for half the money as it would cost to outsource our business that we have. In the last review, the numbers that were given to people who know the numbers, and I was told that the price of outsourcing was what they could do it for was less than what our circuit charges are for the state to connect all these different agencies together. So those are some of the things that are concerning to me. I think that I've had experiences with outsourcing and various other people. The city of Minneapolis outsourced their IT system, and I've been told these are the numbers when I worked there. If you need to move a computer from one desk to another, that's $400. It can take a week to do that. When I go up to the 4th Precinct, they'd call me and say, listen, we need a couple of PCs. We'd have it done in a day. They'd be up and running and ready to go. Today, it could take up to a week or 2 weeks to get that done. Another personal experience with outsourcing is getting things done. I work in the router department. Someone calls me from the city of Minneapolis and they need to open up a port to have communications with another device. And this was as simple as a ping. It took 3 months and 10 or 15 emails and several online meetings. So the efficiencies in terms of the worker over there are just in a shambles. And everything is cost plus. I can guarantee you, you will not save money if you outsource. It all sounds good on paper. The state of Texas thought that too, and now they have had their outsourcer removed. There's a huge lawsuit going on for that. So, and people are in the business of selling their services. OET, we have people that we work with in our department that are MIT graduates, computer science degrees from the University of Minnesota. They're very qualified people. They aren't someone that just walked off the street. So the costs and the other things that you might not have heard about are certainly there, and they're definitely going to cost you more money down the road. One of the things we had talked about here was on line 2-6 of the paperwork here on the bill we were asked to look at was, it's line on 2-6, and it says, the chief information officer may allow a state agency to obtain services specified in paragraph A through a contract with an outside vendor when the value of an outside vendor contract is demonstrated. Well, that's kind of a subjective word and something that someone could always say, well, it's still more valuable that we can do that. So that is one question I have. And the other question is, on 4-17, it says that all employees are going to work under OET. If there are no, so then you could say, well, there are no employees in that department to do the job. They could outsource at will or do whatever they want. So you'd be losing control of your systems, and you would not have that under one roof. A couple of other things I wanted to address. The fellow from Excipio stated we had 5,000 extra computers. Well, I have two in my cube right now. So I'm not saying that it was right or wrong. I'm just saying that most of the people I work with have two or three computers in their cubes. And the last thing I wanted to say about outsourcing, we have state employees that work at night. I got on and worked for free for the state to complete the jobs that need to be completed at my cost, not at the state's cost. If you look at an outsourcer and you want to have jobs and work done, it's going to be billable. I don't think they're going to do it for free. And what is the level of commitment? And what is the turnover that outsourcers have versus the commitment of an employee who is going to do a good job and work hard for the state?
Thank you. Mr. Bick?
Yeah, my name is Dan Bick, and I'd like to bring up a few points. I think, personally, and I think most people I work with are, you know, we're dedicated to cost savings and efficiency, and without a doubt. There's a few things in this bill that I saw that raised some question. A little bit about myself, I do have a computer science degree, about 27 years experience. I'm a certified security expert, and I work in the supporting servers the Office of Enterprise Technology. One thing that that concerns me when you look at this bill in terms of, you know, the ability to outsource is, you know, IT is very much a 100% business. It either works or it doesn't. And you need a lot of control to get good results. You know, the concern whenever you send something external is, do you have security of your information? Do you have manageability of the information? Do you have the ability to audit that company as you would, you know, within the state with the legislative auditor? These are some questions that come up. you know, there's always a vendor who can bid something cheaper. It doesn't mean that there's value in that proposition. An example of this, we had a state web server a number of years ago, which an outside company ran. That company went into bankruptcy, and we couldn't get the hardware back for over a year. So we essentially had an emergency to create another web server. So these are kind of some of the issues that I see with this. You know, in general, I don't think that businesses, right. You know, the businesses generally have a unified approach to IT within even a corporation. They don't allow the payroll department to independently come and try to get services or purchase services. You need to kind of have a unified approach. You know, and I'm not suggesting that's within the agency I work with, but as a state as a whole, you do need standards, you do need a common approach. The part of the bill dealing with value is also a concern, and that's section 2.6. I think that's very undefined, and you know, value is much more than price. It's performance, it's security, it's manageability, and these things can't always be very well defined objectively. And you know, the need to have these within any type of service offering is important, and I think that's where you get a lot more value by doing things internally than having it go elsewhere. So that's my point on that. You definitely, as Brad was mentioning, you know, the dedication you get is also higher. I think the state of Texas and their outsourcing contract had 30% turnover a year in staff. And turnover in staff in IT is not a good thing. Because basically the people you have there have a lot of long-term knowledge of how things operate. So you don't really want that kind of a situation. The other thing, in section 416, starting in that section, there's a reference to how this bill would be implemented. The concerns I have with that are that if employees are transferred from other agencies to OET, as I read it, it sounds like it would be possible to, since there are then at that point no longer any employees at that other agency, they would be capable of sending work outside. Okay. In other words, some of the statutory prohibitions against that would not exist. So I think that's a concern. And I think fundamentally where I'm coming from this is what saves the state money and what is most efficient. And I believe that's by doing things internally. Lastly, you know, I guess in previous position I worked for IBM Global Services, so I've worked both in the private sector and the public sector. Most of my career was in the private sector, and so I really know how these things operate. And what I could say is that, you know, when I worked for an outsourcing company, I made in the 90s, I made $30 an hour. And they charge $180 an hour for my time, okay? So, you know, obviously, these companies are in it to make a gain. There's no question. And I think, you know, the question is, what's the most efficient way? What's the most cost savings way to do this? I do have some concerns as far as the report that was given to the legislator last year. As Brad mentioned, the cost that was specified for what an outsourced company could provide network services was less than the amount that we spend on companies like Quest and telecom companies for the circuits alone. So I fundamentally don't see how that's an accurate estimation. I've been asked to provide input to the Excipio report, and based on that, I have questions as to the accuracy of that report. Basically, for example, I've been asked the number of physical servers I maintain, but not the number of virtual servers. And that's kind of a key term in that you need to know what the efficiency is and what's the potential for cost savings. And others have told me similar statements from other departments. So fundamentally, I guess I have some concerns about that report as to its accuracy. What I have seen is that...
I'm sorry, we only have 10 minutes left of the committee, so if you could kind of wrap up your comments, that would be great.
Yep. Basically, you know, some states have, Utah and Michigan have consolidated successfully internally and are having a lot of great cost savings. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just one more thing to say.
Okay, Mr. Strong.
If you do outsource, you will lose jobs for sure, and you will get your service that you just provided will be less. That has been my experience. It will not be done in a timely fashion, and that's just the bottom line. Thank you for your time.
Does anyone have any question for the witnesses? Thank you. We'll have Representative Downey and Kahn come and wrap up, maybe, or I guess maybe we'll take questions and then let Representative Downey and Kahn wrap up. Do we have any questions to the bill? Any more questions? All right, Representative Downey and Kahn, if you want to. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Quam does have a question.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey and Representative Kahn. Through the testimony, it did come to my attention that on 4/25 through 31, you just have reports coming back to the fiscal committees. I was wondering if it would be appropriate to also include the policy committee, because I think this blends over both.
Madam Chair,
Representative Downey.
Great point. We can easily make that change.
Maybe you could do that, look at that for the next amendment. Committee hearing, get the amendment drafted.
Thank you.
Then I could pass that information on to the committee members. Any other questions? Okay, well, why don't you go ahead and wrap up your comments and
thank you,
move
Madam
on to
Chair. And we've had a pretty far-ranging discussion, and I think the relevant points have been made, and the appropriate concerns and questions have also been pretty fully vetted.
So just a couple of thoughts. I think this kind of, to portray this bill as we're making a firm, hard commitment to outsource everything, if that were the interpretation from some of the testimony that we just had, I think very clearly if you look at the bill, it's pretty intelligently designed, I hope. It gives us the right first steps. I think it's appropriately taking legislative initiative without getting too far ahead of the executive branch. From my perspective, it's maybe not as fast as I'd like, and it doesn't have some of the prescriptions I'd like, but fair enough. This is about us working together with the executive branch, and I think, you know, from my perspective, the time is now. Maybe the time has passed, and I don't know that we really have a choice. You know, when we talk about doing the hard work of reform and finding ways to do things better, and obviously the internal operations of what we do is only a part of that. But the people in OET and the agencies have been working a long time towards something like this. You know, these aren't new muscles we're flexing. OET has got disciplines and has existing programs, you know, in other areas just like this. So I really think with the right executive leadership and legislative leadership working together that this is the exact right first step, and I am strongly recommending passage here today.
Senator Kahn?
I don't think I have anything to add to that. I could point out specific lines where I think things are okay. I'll just draw on the last thing that the last two speakers said, was that they held up as examples the consolidation with that outsourcing of the state of Utah and the state of Michigan, and a bad example of Texas, and we're totally in agreement with that. That's why this bill has been based on Utah, which I think did it in 6 months because it had legislative and gubernatorial support, and Michigan, which took maybe 10 years to do it, and not looking at Texas at all.
Well, thank you for bringing this forward. I know you both have been working on it, Representative Kahn, for years, and Representative Downey, since you've been here. I think this is a good first step, and I think we have to be open to looking at doing things differently. Does anybody have any other questions or discussion? Okay, seeing no further discussion, Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to renew my motion to move House File 191 as amended. Recommend it to pass and be referred to the State Government Finance Committee.
Thank you. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, please say nay. Motion does prevail.
Yes.
And that concludes our business for the day. Meeting adjourned.